Welcome, everybody, to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. And I'm really excited because we have a very special guest on our show today. We're dedicated to empowering individuals to transform their lives' greatest challenges into opportunities for resilience, peace, and mind, and unshackling their potential. I'm your host, Stacey Chalemi. And each episode, and today especially, we're going to provide you with actionable insights and wisdom from incredible individuals who have navigated through adversity to emerge stronger and more empowered lives. Now, today we have a very special guest, and he is going to help us explore the transformative journey. He's a beacon. His name is Andy Campbell. He's a beacon of hope, inspiration, and those who are living with pancreatic cancer. Andy's 15-year breakthrough core beliefs have not only empowered him to thrive, but they have also have guided him in his mission to empower others to not just survive life storms, but to dance in the rain. Andy, I am so excited to have you on the show. You have an amazing life story. You've been through so much in life, and you have conquered all, and you still conquer, and you don't give up. And that's what I love about you, is that you just have an amazing life that, no matter what was thrown at you, you'd never let it, if it had knocked you down, you got right back up. And you continue to do that with the way you think, the way your actions, and I just want to dive deeper today into your life journey and how you became such a strong individual. And I also want to mention for listeners that Andy is also an author. He is the author of Overcoming Life's Toughest Challenges and Setbacks, and he is here to tell us about his book also. So could you share with us your journey and experience of living with pancreatic cancer and how it inspired your mission and transformation and challenges and opportunities?
Yeah, thank you, Stacey, and thank you so much for allowing me to be here today and share the story. I think pancreatic cancer is not a, it is a diagnosis that when you hear it, can certainly take the wind out of you. I had had some abdominal pain, and it turns out that it had nothing to do with pancreatic cancer, but I knew something was wrong. I didn't want to go to the physician for a number of reasons. Mainly, my mother and three of her sisters had died from breast cancer, and I was kind of convinced that cancer would get me at some point. I don't know why, but I just that it always stuck with me. Probably just, from the traumatic experiences of watching my mother go through that and watching her sisters go through that, it just stuck with me. My wife convinced me that I should go. Pardon me. My wife convinced me I should go to the doctor, and I went, and I have a great relationship with our general family physician. And he didn't seem too concerned at the time. He thought maybe it was a gallbladder, gallstones or something. He gave me a medication, and based on the way it reacted, he thought, yeah, just let me send you for an ultrasound. We might have to remove your gallbladder or something like that. And I could tell from the tech's face when she did the ultrasound that something was not right. Of course, they won't say anything to you about it, but you just look at it, you're like, oof, that's a bad look. And so the doctor's office called me that afternoon and said, bad news, we found the ultrasound found lesions on your liver. And I messaged the doctor and I said, at least it's not pancreatic cancer. Liver cancer is bad, but at least it's not pancreatic cancer. And I had an MRI the next day, and they came back and they said, well, actually, it is. So I think, I think the first reaction is, at least for me, some people are more stoic than I am. I just turned into a puddle. Like I was just like, holy cow, this is worse than I had imagined. Like I always thought maybe prostate cancer or maybe even male breast cancer, because it breast cancer was so prominent in my mother's family. And I'd been to the doctor, I'd been checked all these times. And I think what happened was one thing that happened, and one reason why I appreciate being here is because my physician gave me at that moment a word of encouragement that helped me. And sometimes people just need one or two words of encouragement when you're just down in it, whatever it is. And he said, listen, I think you have a genetic mutation related to your mother that you got from your mother and all her sisters. We need to get it tested. I've read a lot of studies that show that some chemotherapies they use now are can turn out pretty well if you have this genetic mutation. And so my advice to you is do not quit your job. Do not take your last vacation. I believe we have a shot at this. So let's just take it day a day at a time. He then proceeded to give me, pardon me, I'm sorry. He then proceeded to give me a muscle relaxer and some things that would help me sleep because I was just completely wrecked. I didn't want to die. And, I'd seen my mother deal with breast cancer. That was not, she had kind of a spirit that would not quit. And so sometimes that leads to a difficult battle with cancer if, if you're just determined to not leave. That's sometimes almost more difficult because your soul, your spirit's just like, yeah, we're not quitting, right? That's not. And I knew pancreatic cancer. Geez, that seemed like a really tough way to go. And so, but I lived on those words of encouragement. And after a few days, then it just kind of kicks in. Like there's just like, we got to get you a PET scan. We got to start on chemo. We got to get a port put in. We got to do all these things. So I started focusing on what came next, and just kind of off the odds. He also told me something that I've never forgotten. He said, Andy, don't look at the odds of an overall population. The overall population is like 3% human at that time. This was almost 7 years ago. He said the overall statistics for surviving 5 years at that time were about 3%. I'm sorry, 1%. And to make it 3 years was about 3%. He said, however, don't forget how statistics work. For every individual, it's 50-50. You either make it or you don't. So you've got just as good a shot to make it as you do to not make it. And so, with a few words of encouragement, I started thinking back to the things that I had learned, the things that I'd written down over time. And eventually, those kind of became like, my little collected pieces of paper became the, what I call the 15 core beliefs, my 15 core beliefs. And I just relied on those and my family and my wife, my children. But I relied on those core beliefs to help me remember that my ancestors had been through really difficult times. I had learned to live by the example my mother set in essence, dying over 11 years, like, through all of that. Like I had an example of persistence. Some people don't have that example, so maybe people like me can be an example of persistence, but she was for me. So, the I figured if it's 50-50 for me as an individual, then I'm not going to pay attention to the statistics. I'm just going to do the next thing that my physician asked me to do. And whatever that is, I'm just going to do that next thing. Now, I had a great physician, and I use the word physician different than doctor. I think there's too many doctors in the world and not enough physicians, right? And so too many doctors see the body as a set of individual components, and physicians tend to see the body as one big system that has individual components. We're talking about your husband, right? He sees the body as a whole thing that is connected. And so that's the way my physician was. So he asked me to do some things, and I did those things, and I'm happy that, for me so far, I'm on the 50-50 side of staying alive.
I love that. Your core beliefs have empowered you to thrive throughout your toughest setbacks. Can you elaborate on these breakthrough beliefs and how they have shaped your resilience and peace of mind?
The first one is no one outruns the universe. And I think I kind of start with that one. I mean, like there's a lot of them. Ultimately, the core beliefs in like number 15 is finishing. Number 14 is, the necessity of perseverance. But it starts, for me, it starts with kind of beginning in a place of humility. And sometimes, to submit to something kind of has a what has a very negative connotation to people who are kind of type A and they're not really into submitting to anything, right? Like you're going to make your own way, you're going to do your own thing. But the universe has a way of helping you, pardon me, of helping one come to terms with that there are things that you must submit to. And for me, one of those is you must submit, or a few of them are you must submit to be humble. You know, you must submit to be generous with the time that you have. You need to submit to be accepting of the situation you're in, you know. So you need to be submissive to gratitude, you know, you do have today. And so some of it was just, you know, so for me that one kind of starts with a mindset. It's not, I mean, we're all gonna die, right? I mean, the number one cause of death across all of humanity since the beginning of humanity is birth, right? It's not cancer, it's not something else. You're born, you die. Now it's a matter of timing and what you do with that time. And so, you know, no one outruns the universe, come to terms with it. And now what are you going to do kind of inside the guardrails? How are you going to make the best of this situation? There was a point at which I decided I would stop chemotherapy. The chemotherapy had been successful. It was reducing the tumors. It was doing better than anyone had expected or most people had expected. But it was ultimately killing me faster than it was killing the cancer. And so I came to a decision that, you know, I didn't want to die from the chemotherapy. So I'd made enough progress. I wanted to kind of live and continue. I would die later now, but I would live for a little while in a better place. So I was going to stop the chemo. And that's where I learned. I mean, I didn't learn it then, but I kind of wrote down this belief I have that there are no hard decisions, there are only hard consequences. And so you hear people say all the time, well, that's a hard decision, you know, or why did you, I'm really struggling with it because it's a hard decision. And what I came to terms with in that moment of deciding to stop the chemotherapy was that actually what was really difficult were the consequences. I would die a painful death. I would, you know, I was basically, am I just giving up by stopping this treatment? You know, I didn't want to just quit. I'm gonna miss my wife. I'm gonna have to leave. My children are gonna have to see me die this way. You know, all those things. But the decision was actually really straightforward. Like I already knew what the right decision was. And so I kind of came to a place where I said, well, then most of the time, I think we as humans know the right thing to do. You know, we know not to do something or to do something. We know not to speak that way to somebody. We know not to treat someone that way. We know, you know, we just know. But the consequences become like in our head, and we only typically think of negative consequences, right? And so we take the difficulty of the perceived consequences and we take those and put them on the decision, and then we say it's a hard decision. But it's really not a hard decision. And the consequences, you don't actually know if the consequences that you think are going to come from your decision will actually happen. You know, what happened to me was because I quit chemo, my doctor then talked me into doing a 20-day water-only fast. I got to 10 days, but it reset my immune system completely. Then I agreed to do one more chemotherapy to see if the fasting would help lessen the side effects. So I did a 5-day water-only fast. Then I did my 16th round of chemo. It didn't make a difference at that point. So I decided again, that was the end of chemo. But in that time frame, my oldest daughter found a trial at a clinic at the University of Pennsylvania. And the specifics of that trial were there were two arms, both focused on people with pancreatic cancer who had had a good response to chemotherapy and had the genetic mutation I have. It's the only one in the country, probably the only one in the world that was running that trial. And she found it. But if I had not stopped the chemo, I might not have been eligible for the trial. So like that decision, while the consequences were hard, for some reason I knew it was the right decision. I just didn't know it was the right decision because this trial was going to be there for me, if that makes sense, right?
It makes
So
sense,
if I had just kept saying the decision's too hard and let the all I could see were negative consequences, I never once thought, you know, if I stop this chemotherapy, It might be that in 90 days, a trial would show up, and it will be the trial that I do the immunotherapy and I get on this cancer drug, and I'll be here for 7 years. That thought never crossed my mind. All I could see was the negative consequences. So I encourage people to pay attention to that still small voice that's telling them the right decision, and don't let the perceived consequences stop them from doing the right thing, which they know to do. And then there's just a number, like I said, there's 15 of them. Another one that I really like is, and mainly because before I did the fast, I used to like milk chocolate. After the fasting, I can only eat dark chocolate. But when I liked milk chocolate, I wrote down that every challenge has a chewy nougat center made of opportunity, because I liked Milky Ways, and I always thought, like, that's all, like, what's in the middle of that candy bar. And I don't like the phrase "every dark cloud has a silver lining," because it implies the silver lining is on the outside of the dark cloud, and so it's like, well, if I could just get to the silver lining, why would I ever enter the dark cloud? Like, just take the silver lining and move on. But the truth, for me, it's more accurate to think of it realistically and say, I'm in the middle of this challenge, this setback, this dark cloud. This thing has happened. I should at least get something out of it for having gone through it. I don't believe it's the purpose for why I went through it, but I should at least take something from it. And I think that's the little chewy nougat center of opportunity, right? So some of it is, and it's hard to do when you're in the middle of it. Like, I couldn't think of, I get a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. How am I going to deal with, how am I going to think about there's an opportunity inside that? My son takes his own life. My youngest son takes his own life 4 years ago. Like, where is the opportunity in that? When you're in it, there's no way to be there. But over time, after his suicide, and then through a lot of work and therapy and EMDR and, the emotion code and all these different things, I've gotten to the point where I could talk about it. So to me, that's an opportunity to share with people who might be struggling. So I just really believe that, sometimes you have to go all the way into the dark cloud to find that one thing that doesn't necessarily make it worth it, but at least you take something good from it. And that's usually all the way at the center of the problem, or all the way at the far end of the problem. It's never close, it doesn't feel like. But yeah, so there's a number of them that mean a lot to me. And that's over time, because I think in pictures. I don't really think in words. I would have these, I would visualize something, and I would say, well, that's, I can't, I'm not a great writer, so I don't write like a whole paragraph or about it, but I could write a cliche down, I could write a phrase down, and that's kind of how they came into being.
You've been through a lot, and I'm sure when your son committed suicide, that was very hard to deal with. I couldn't even imagine. Did your core beliefs kind of help you through that also?
Because it's, one of them that I work to remember and almost need to remember it every day, because you look around in a situation like that and you don't even really have time to experience the loss completely yourself, because my wife is devastated. It's her youngest child. I mean, it's our youngest child, but it's the youngest child for a mother. She carried this child. She fed him. She, as his three siblings were a little older, she had a little more time to spend with them, and they had a very tight relationship. She was devastated, really, like, devastated. And then you focus on the other three siblings, like, how will they survive? Well, what happened there? How will you get through it? But one of the core beliefs that I kind of hung on to was, so in college, my major was finance. And in finance, like in a lot of, economic statistics, a lot of mathematical oriented disciplines, there are formulas that give you, they exist for a purpose to give you a summation, an answer. So if you want the net present value of a dollar today, there's a formula for that. The formula does not change. But that formula is comprised of variables. In between the plus, the minus, the division, the subtraction, that there's these variables. And those variables do, in fact, change, right? They do change. The equation stays constant, but the variables change. And so one of my core beliefs is equations are constant, variables are constantly changing. And I wrote that down to remind myself to go back to those equations, in kind of the finance world, that the equation of life doesn't change. Like it is what it is from the beginning until the day you die. Like this, the equation for how it occurs stays the same, but the variables inside of it, they will change over time. They have changed every moment of every day of my life. Those variables have adjusted. Some I changed, some other people changed, some the universe changed, some God moved around. So what I'd used it for at that time was just to remind myself and to do the best I could to remind my family that things will change. The grief is overwhelming now, but do not quit. Things will change. Today seems like a day when everyone is highly emotional, and in those situations, sometimes people say things they don't mean because it's just the grief is overwhelming, and it's like things will change, right? Just hold on and give things a chance to change. Don't quit. Just keep moving forward. And visually, how that worked out for me was I saw myself laying face down in this muddy muck. I found my son, and I just couldn't move. Like I was stuck, but I knew I didn't want to be stuck. And some of the things in that, some of the variables in those equations, I could change. And one of those that I could change, even though I couldn't walk at that point, I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally, spiritually, right? I could claw my way forward, right? I could at least change the variable by clawing my way forward. I could not, I would, I did have the ability to not allow myself to stay there for the rest of my life. And it might take time. But that was kind of my input into the equation. And so I would, metaphorically claw my way per day. And sometimes I would slide backwards and then I would claw again, and it was exhausting. But over 4 years, I've been able to start crawling on my hands and knees. And then I was able to, get enough upright that I could get up on my feet and walk, bent over, and still with the weight of all of that on your shoulders, right? And I wouldn't say I'm walking upright. I'm not sprinting yet after only 4 years, but and I think our family is, through everyone doing a lot of mental and spiritual work, we're changing the variables in the equation. And so we do have days where there's some happiness now.
That's wonderful. Now, what advice would you give to individuals bouncing back from setbacks and finding inner strength in the times of adversity?
First thing I would say is do not quit. Do not quit. Give yourself the opportunity. Give God, your higher power, the universe, whatever it is that you believe in or don't believe in, but give time. Actually, time doesn't heal all wounds. That's a lie. It actually doesn't heal all wounds. But time can allow your experiences to grow and become a larger percentage of your life than just your loss or just your setback, right? Just And by setback, that can be the most traumatic of things. So I would say, one, don't quit. Two, compete only with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to meet other people who have had not the same circumstance, but similar circumstances.
Right.
And they're going to feel, it's going to feel like they're further ahead of you than you are. They're making more progress. They're able to get through it easier.
Right.
Don't pay attention to them. This is your journey, and
Mm-hmm.
this is your ability. This is your struggle. And so all that matters is not when or how they make it. The only thing that matters is you making it,
Yeah.
you continuing forward, right? And if
Mm-hmm.
other people fall off and they don't make it, that don't let that drag you down. If other people appear to be ahead of you, my experience has been they're actually not. They're just they have the appearance of it for whatever reason, maybe your perception, maybe their perception. But the only thing that really matters is that you continue forward, no matter how small those steps are. And so if you're in the middle of it, whatever it is today, do not quit. Give time and opportunity to provide opportunities for you to live again, to recover in some way, maybe not wholly. I don't know that I'll ever fully recover from the loss of my son. There's physical things that'll probably always be the same because of the cancer treatments, yada, yada, yada. But we can give time a chance to let us recover enough that we can find some joy and happiness again. And it may not be the same joy and happiness we had before, but it's still some joy and happiness in life. And it may seem impossible right now, but that's why you don't quit. And that's why you listen to people who will tell you, yes, it sucks. Yes, it's exhausting. No, that hole in your heart will most likely never completely heal, but that does not prevent you from finding better experiences, living a more fulfilling life, and finding some happiness along the way. And it's worth it because your life matters. Okay. You had this setback, but your life matters. You are an integral thread in the fabric of the universe, and you need to be here. And you need to accomplish whatever it is, no matter how insignificant it may appear to you. You don't actually know the ripple effect of who you're affecting 3 degrees of separation away from you. So you matter, you're important, and what you're going through may make all those things seem untrue right now, but they are not untrue. They are true. And so my advice would be find a way to not quit.
I love it. I love it. Now, you mentioned that the importance of embracing resilience, perseverance, and a mindset shift. How have these practices helped you turn setbacks into stepping stones?
I believe one of the books I read after my son's passing was by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. And I will get the number wrong. I know it's either 1 in 27 or 1 in 28. He writes that only 1 in 27 or 1 in 28 that went into the camps made it out alive. But he said, there were those who had no meaning, and so they relied on just hope. They hoped the LS would show up. They hoped the guards would be nicer. They hoped, they hoped, and then things would not happen in the time frame, and so they would either take their own lives or they would die, And then he said there was this group of men that he observed. This group of men that he observed that had meaning, they had reasons to live, and like his he knew that when he went to the camps that they'd taken his wife, and his meaning was to survive so that he could see his wife. She was pregnant at the time that she went to the camp, and so his meaning was to be able to join her again when this was over, and that sustained him. But out of the group that had meaning, most of those would still go to the chambers and die, but they died with meaning. They died with purpose in their lives. Not purpose in dying the way they did, but just they had a purpose internal to live, and then they still went to the chambers. And he's what I took away from what he said was, if you want to be the one in 27 or one in 28 that makes it through this situation, then you need to have meaning in your life. And the meaning for me was my wife and children. And so I think that mindset to have meaning, that's a choice to look for meaning. And he gives the example of someone else who made it through and they had lost their entire family. And because of his particular sect of Judaism, like it was incumbent upon him to have more children because his children had all died. His wife had died in the camps, and he was distraught. And he helped him find that purpose in his religious beliefs that took him to a place where he ended up marrying again and having more children. And like it gave him meaning to live. So, but that was I took away from that. That was that man's choice to believe what Frankl was sharing with him. And so I think we have a choice to, even though we don't feel it, we can take the act, and the act is kind of a step in belief, to say that I will choose today to have meaning no matter what comes out of this setback. I will still pursue that meaning. That will give me determination, courage, perseverance ultimately. And I don't feel any of those things now, but I'm going to choose to seek meaning, even though it may seem like a mirage and it seems like a waste. I'm going to do that because I have seen other people who have been sustained by this. And so I think that choice, that one small tiny choice in your life to decide that you still will, if Frankl can go through those, if people can go through those, and there's sadly an infinite number of those stories from people who've been through genocide and the Uyghurs and the Christians in Iraq that were burned alive. Like there's too many examples, but you still need meaning. So if you do that, if you can make that small choice, then I think that shifts your mindset, right? Like having meaning is what kind of shifts your mindset. And so, yeah, I think that mindset shift, that small first step, is really kind of the biggest step you'll take, one can take, in deciding that, I am going to pursue this differently. I'm not going to quit. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do my best to finish it with meaning. And to me, that's kind of where the core beliefs come in, that between your setback and the moment that you decide that you want to have meaning, that you want to continue and not quit. To me, the core beliefs kind of have helped me get through those things and helped sustain a mindset, even though day to day, minute to minute, my mindset may be down or off, or why am I even doing this anymore? Over the longer haul, it does, like that mindset, you need that mindset. And so the core beliefs helped me in that mindset until I could then, get to a place where my cancer treatments would change, where I would come across this thing called EMDR, and that would help me, kind of reroute neurologically the traumatic experiences and memories of all these things that had happened. And then, that led me down the path of, a different type of EMDR, kind of like a mixture of EMDR and hypnotherapy. And then that led me to, kind of like the emotion code and the body code. And like, so it, but it really started, the mindset shift started with that one little decision. I kind of want to be like Frankl. Life sucks. Probably doesn't suck as bad as his life does, but life sucks right now. I don't mean like broadly, I just mean like in that moment, like life's hard right then. And so it's like, but I want to be like that guy. I want to be like him. And I want to be like my ancestors who didn't quit. And so I think all those things kind of contribute to the initial mindset. Then for me, the core beliefs kind of sustained that mindset, helped me sustain that mindset. And then one of the core beliefs is be insatiable, have an insatiable curiosity, just be insatiably curious. And so it kind of sustained me until the time where I became more curious. I'd been through cognitive behavioral therapy before, and I'd then talk to them. But that curiosity, when someone said, there's this thing, have you ever heard of this thing called EMDR? And I was like, I could have either at that moment made a decision, no, I don't want to know anything about it, or I could have been curious, and I was curious, and so I think, yeah, the core beliefs help sustain my mindset. Look, if I'm gonna die, I wanna die with meaning, right? And we're all gonna die, so to me, that's the choices, and that shifts your mindset, I think, right? I don't know if that
100%.
answers your question, but
No,
that's.
it does. It does. And I think with that mindset, you look at things differently. We're all going to die one day. We don't know what the next day may bring. We could walk outside our home and cross the street and get hit by a car. People have this notion that they're going to live a long life, and they put this thing in their head, but nobody knows what our journey has in store. Anybody, our lives can get cut off for various reasons on this planet Earth. We don't know what's in store, and I do believe that there's something better awaiting for us on the other side, but we're here for a purpose. I feel like it's boot camp, like I feel like we're
Yeah.
here and we're learning things, and we're gaining resilience, wisdom, strength, and all these other good things. But I think it's for a reason. I don't think we're just here for the fun of it. I think there's a reason why we go through what we go through in life. And we don't know what the next day may bring. And I think that's why people have to have gratitude in their life, and they have to be more appreciative, because we really don't know what tomorrow may bring. And I think having that mindset and really and just appreciating the today for what it is, and trying to make the most out of today, just by living life and appreciating what we have, and just and looking at things in a more positive aspect and not focusing on the negative. I think, it changes the way you view life. It changes the way you feel. And I really think it could add years to your life also. I think it could, I think once we give up, once we focus on the negative, that's when people start drowning, because the mind is a powerful thing. And I don't think people realize how powerful the mind really is. Once we give up, our mind puts this notion that I give up, our body gives up. Everything gives up, it's a powerful tool, our brain, and I don't think people sometimes understand how powerful the brain really is.
But no, and I think you just said it so well. I think that really kind of encapsulates some of what Frankl was trying to say, right? Like, if it's just hope, hope can burn out. Hope is like, I hope things get better. But love is like meaning. And, if you can find that thing to love. And so to gratitude, I love walking outside now. I never really paid, I mean, I grew up on a Or my early formative years were on a row crop farm in South Alabama, and so you were outside all day and you were in nature. But after a while, you just get used to being around man-made things, and you're doing your day and you're running here and running there and doing this. And it was only after some of these things I looked up one day and I was like, wow, that's a really beautiful sky. Like, I haven't actually seen the sky. I haven't, I've been under it. I've noticed it, I've kind of complained about it, like, damn sun in my eyes, now I gotta put the visor down and put sunglasses. Like, but I've never just kind of looked at it and said, that's a beautiful sky. There's a beautiful cloud. Like, I really like being here, like, I'm breathing today. Shit, I'm breathing today. And so sometimes these setbacks, these really difficult, traumatic things that happen, one of the things that can come out of it is, if we choose to, is that you can. I am not grateful for the things that have happened to me per se, but they have kind of, no one outruns the universe. The universe has kind of reminded me, through those processes, that, oxygen is a really cool thing. Like, it's like we just like we're all breathing right now and we don't even think about it. But if you think about it for a minute, oxygen is a really cool thing. Like, I'm grateful for oxygen,
Right.
actually. You know, how many
Yeah.
people, like, I don't go through every day going, man, I'm just thankful to be breathing. But if you stop and think about it for a minute, you're like, oxygen, that's
Yeah.
crazy. It's crazy that oxygen exists and that we breathe it
Yeah.
and that it works, you know, like it works. So I think your point about gratitude is, I have found, and I think it is true, people who have been through it at some point, either they don't and they become bitter, or there are those people that find some level of gratitude and they become less bitter.
Yeah.
And so I think your statement about gratitude is just like people talk about it all the time, like you should be grateful, you should be. But it really does help to find something to be grateful for,
Yeah.
even if it's just oxygen, you
Exactly.
know?
Sometimes I would walk in the backyard and I would walk on the deck with a cup of coffee and I'd look around and I would say, wow, you know, how miraculous is this planet Earth? The trees create oxygen. Everything is here for a purpose. Like if you look around in your backyard, everything is here for a purpose. It's not here just to make the planet look pretty. Everything has a purpose, you know. Every living, breathing creature, even the trees that are living, everything is here for a purpose, and they all do a specific job and makes the world go round. It makes us be able to be here, and you know, and to just think about it. And it's not a bunch of craters that just like formulated and hit each other, and we created the earth. You know, there's more to it. We just don't. We're just not. Our minds can't like, you know, fathom it. But it's a pretty, you know, when you think about it, there's more out there. There's more there. You know, while we're here, you know, all these little things that we just talked about are miracles, you know, and they keep us
They
alive,
are
keep
miracles.
us going, they keep us breathing, they keep us being able to do the things we love to do, you know. So and we should really, you know, have gratitude. We really should, because I think we overlook these things and we just focus, I think, on the things that aren't really important, you know. And you know, in our minds, a lot of people might think certain things are important, but without certain things like trees and oxygen, we wouldn't be here. So maybe it's time to shift our mindset and be a little more appreciative for the little things in life that are really big things.
So, I don't think I could agree with you more. And I would say that, you know, some of us have been jaded by life and we forget those things. And one of the things that I am very grateful for, my oldest son, he wanted to travel. He wanted to just get out and explore things. And so, actually, he was out on one of his trips. I guess it's called overlanding. But he's since expanded. He started, you know, first trip was to the Southern Alps and those things. And then he's made other trips to a lot of places, New Zealand and
Yeah.
different areas of Canada. And but I guess he's what one calls an influencer on Instagram. And,
Yeah.
you know, he has a website and he does these things. But he has come to believe that his mission in life is to remind people and encourage people to, and this is kind of his motto, to go out there. And, you know, you talk about like when you step into the backyard and you're on your deck and you're having a cup of coffee and you look around, his whole mission is to remind people. And so he's gone to all the national parks and, you know, he posts on that and he goes to all these places like, you know, these trips to New Zealand. But his whole point in this is, and it reminds me that what we exist in too much is man-made.
Yeah.
And so then that kind of contains us to our options are man-made. Our
Yeah.
purpose is around these man-made. And so his encouragement to people is to go out there because his belief is, and I believe he's correct, that if you want to connect with your higher power, if you want to connect with the right vibrations in the universe. If you want to connect, if you just want to be able to breathe and have some modicum of peace for a moment, you have to go into the thing, you have to go to the place that man did not create. You have to go there. And that by going to the things that man did not create, it reminds us that we were created and that what really matters is what we didn't create. You know, like like we talk about the air, the trees, the mountains, the valleys, and pretty much everything we will see and do in life has been created in front of us. You know, you see valleys, you see peaks, you do. So I think you're spot on. And that one of the things when you're going through these setbacks, one of the things you can do is take your shoes off on a warm day, not on a cold day, but on a warm day, take your shoes off, walk on the ground, feel the earth, take a drive just a little ways away from where you are and sit in nature for a few minutes and just be, you know? And I think that in those places, if you can just be, just sit, one, you have to sit with yourself. One, you have to sit, you know, another is that you have to sit with your problems. And I think that somehow, I don't know how it is that God did this, but being there kind of, it will help kind of wash away or diminish your worries and your anxieties for just a little bit, you know, because I think a lot of the vibrations of the man-made stuff enhance our anxieties and worries and things, right? It just operates at such a frequency that like it just enhances the not so good stuff. And sometimes we need to go someplace and just sit. So I think nature can be both physically healing, but absolutely spiritually and mentally healing, you know, or m mentally and emotionally healing.
I agree. What are some of the lessons that you've learned about energy management, integrative protocols, and supporting supplements in your journey with pancreatic cancer?
So when it came to the cancer, I had two goals. I kind of developed two goals over time. Cancer, at least solid tumor cancers, their whole goal in life, you know, they're not really evil. They just don't know better, right? They're kind of defective cells. And so there doesn't mean I don't want them to die. It's just I kind of understand, you got to kind of understand what they're doing, you know, like what their mindset is. And their mindset is consume energy so that we can replicate. Like that's the only goal in life. Consume energy, replicate. So my physician first came to me right after I was diagnosed. I got the port put in. He goes, listen, before you start chemotherapy, there's a lot of studies out that acupuncture will help you, helps people with energy and helps clear toxins. And I don't, you know, nobody really understands how it all works, but there's studies on it. Would you consider it? And I said, absolutely. And so I started acupuncture. And then he came to me in a couple of weeks and he said, hey, there's a lot of work out there about guided imagery. If you do guided imagery, it can help with energy and with clearing toxins, helping your body clear toxins, helping your mind release, you know, proteins and amino acids that could help your immune system. Like nobody really understands it, but there's a lot of work out there about this. Did you do it? I said, you know, because I am insatiably curious. I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I want to stay alive. You know, let's put it together. And then I think we have a food supply and soil that are really depleted. And so we don't have enough nutrients. And people will say, well, why do you take all these supplements? And I would say, well, because forget about the recommended daily allowance. Your food supply and your soil doesn't actually provide you with those. So if this were 1920, we'd probably be in a different situation, but we're not, right? It's highly processed food coming off big feedlots and, you know, industrial type farming. It's not regenerative. You just don't get everything. So it taking supplements and, you know, minerals and vitamins seemed reasonable to me because if I'm not getting them through food, I should, my body needs those things. So I do chiropractic care, right? Because so a lot of those things were energy. I wanted to have the inner, my body, I needed to be able to sustain myself. And my physician talked to me about this. said every treatment we have today is energy depleting. So you have to do things to increase your energy and make sure the energy is flowing properly through your body, which is kind of odd for like a Western medicine doctor to think of, but that was his take on it, right? And so I was
Yeah.
like, yeah, that makes sense to me. So chiropractic care, acupuncture, guided imagery, Reiki, all those things were about doing what I could to provide energy or rebalance energy so that it would sustain me. The
Yeah.
supplements and the on-label and off-label medications were about weakening, if it was only 1%, but weakening the cancer cells so that the standard of care therapies or the new or the immunotherapy or whatever I was doing, I wanted to give that the best opportunity I could
Yeah.
to work. And I didn't have any control over that. I didn't determine how the chemotherapy would make me feel. I didn't determine which chemotherapy they gave me. Like all that stuff was out of my control.
Yeah.
But what I could do was I could take supplements that did not interfere with the standard of care therapies, and they might in some way weaken the cancer cells so they'd be easier to kill.
Right.
And so I kind of looked at it as two prongs of my defense or offense was one, I have to be in the right energy state.
Yeah.
And two, I have to, what are the things that I can do that would weaken the cancer cells?
Right.
So those things kind of came together for me as kind of like the integrative approach. You know, I'd make sure I went to the chiropractor to make sure that I was in as best alignment as I could so the energy would flow.
Right.
I would take I had my chemotherapy lasted 3 days. So I would go in one day for like 6 to 7 hours. They would put two of the three drugs in me with all the stuff they put around it to keep it from
Yeah.
killing you in the office. And then they would send you home with they would hook a pump up to my port. And that chemotherapy was toxic enough that they sent me home with a hazmat bag. And they
Yeah.
were like, if it ever spills, you got to put it in this bag, call the fire department. Which
Right.
I didn't think was a great thing to put inside of me if it was outside of me and you had to call the hazmat team. But
Yeah.
it took 3 days, and when I would take the port off, I would be gray, completely exhausted. But I would get to the acupuncturist, and he would do a protocol that would last 45 minutes or so. And I became where I would kind of go into this meditative state while I was
Yeah.
there. And I would go in gray and leaning against the wall because I barely had the energy. And he and his wife would help me get to a table.
Yeah.
And an hour later, I would come out with color in my face and under my own power, walking out the front door. And so I think I have this thing on my website, and it's probably not the greatest way to phrase it, but I believe that we were lied to as children. Werewolves are not actually brought down with a single silver bullet.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of silver bullets. And for me, cancer or some of these traumatic events, the loss of my son, metaphorically, those are like werewolves. And so you've got to throw a lot of things at them
Yeah.
to lessen their impact in your life. And that to me was what an integrative approach to the problem. And everyone, I'm not a doctor, I don't recommend what I did to anyone else. I'm just saying,
Right.
I think an integrative approach, however, that is tailored to that individual, an
Right.
integrative approach, not just of supplements and mineral, minerals but food, the type of food you put in your body, and then to me, it's like a joining of Eastern and Western kind of views of what
Yeah.
I could do, the energy side with the treatment side, and so for me, all those things came together. I think I take 50-ish vitamins, minerals, on-label and off-label medications, capsules and capsules and pills and stuff every day from those
Yeah.
categories of things. While I still do acupuncture, Reiki, chiropractic, all those things. So I just, to me, it just makes sense to
Yeah.
do all these things at once because you have to sustain yourself with good energy through the treatments
Right.
and to be able for your body to be able to put up a resistance.
Right.
And you need to weaken the thing that you're resisting so that you
Right.
can resist better. And so that's what the integrative approach is to me.
I love that. I love that. Now, what message do you hope to convey to individuals facing similar challenges and setbacks, encouraging them to find hope and strength in difficult times?
There are examples that if you choose to use them, show you that it is possible for you to come out of this thing that you're in and to find purpose, meaning, to live out that purpose and meaning in spite of what you've gone through.
Right.
And so my message to people is, if I can be one of those examples, then I'm happy about that. If you can be one of those examples at the person on the street corner, if you read a book someplace and that, but ultimately, I would encourage someone going through it to simply do not quit. Do not get to the point, or if you get to that point, seek help, because your life is incredibly important.
Yes.
Do not take the path of suicide. You will only leave the pain behind. One of the things I learned with my son's passing was that I believe, because he told me along the way, but I believe that he really believed the pain would go with him. Things would be better for everyone else. And it was very logical for him. He was a very high IQ individual. So, that's actually a risk factor in suicide. But so don't just look at somebody and think that because they're contemplating suicide, like because of their look or their hairstyle or the way they dress, they're probably highly intelligent enough to wonder why we would go through all this pain just to end up dying anyway, right?
Yeah.
And I don't particularly, I mean, I find meaning in life. But I can see how for some that's a logical
Right.
way to look at the world. But if you're there, I would say, please remember that the pain does not go with you. The
Yes.
pain remains, and it will spread like a cancer across generations. It will spread to the people that love you. It will spread to the people who know you, and it
Right.
will spread to people that do not know about you, but that energy will be out there. They will hear about you. It will contact them. And that will be passed on generationally. So it's
Yeah.
not just about your current situation, because if you stay and you confront the pain and you survive the setback, you survive this traumatic experience,
Yeah.
then what you will pass along is persistence, perseverance, determination, and that will inspire other people around you and inspire generations to come.
Yes.
As my mother and my grandmother before me and my grandfather, all my aunts did before me. And so what I would say is, it is true, as Frankl said, sometimes hope is not enough. So make the decision to find meaning, find something to love,
Yes.
find something to love, a pet, a flower, find something to love,
Right.
put some meaning around it. And I would encourage you to not quit. God may very well be moving the universe in your favor right now.
Right.
You need to stay here and get that a chance to work out. So my encouraging word is do not quit. Part of the encouragement is be realistic. It sucks right now. It does. But your life has meaning. It has purpose. You're valuable. Do the hard work. And inspire someone else.
I love that. Now, if you had to take today's conversation and you wanted to pull out a couple important factors from everything we discussed today, what are some things you'd like to emphasize to the listeners today?
One, be religious only about religion. And I think that goes directly with be insatiably curious. I have my religious beliefs. And I like to think for me, they're a dogma that I While I am imperfect in the following of those aspirational goals, I do have those aspirational goals. But that doesn't serve me well in other places. In other places, I need to not be religious. And by religious, I mean like the dogma aspect of it, right? Like, don't be so convinced that you're right about that. Now, I may be really convinced about my religious beliefs, but I don't think that serves me well in an argument with my wife. I don't. I made that mistake a lot. I've been married 37 years. Like I said, I'm imperfect at these core beliefs, okay? And she reminds me that I'm imperfect in these core beliefs. But the point is, I did come to realize that the things that might serve me well in business do not serve me well in my personal relationships. They don't. There are times when arguing with someone in the grocery store is just not, I mean, it's like it's just not worth it. Why am I, we're going to argue over whether Navel oranges or Valencia oranges are the better oranges. And I've seen people do that before, right? Like, and you're like, guys, this is not actually your religious faith. It's an orange, you know? And so I think there's a lot of circumstances during the day, though, that come up, and we should question ourselves, is this really some place that I can be, that I should be inflexible on this, right? Is that really where I should apply that level of inflexibility? One, it's exhausting to do that all day long. I've done it. It's really tiring. The other, it's not good for relationships. It's not good for a community, and you need community and relationships when you go through difficult times. And then, kind of the other side of that coin is to be insatiably curious. If you're going through a cancer treatment, don't just trust everybody. Okay, trust but verify. Do your own research. Be insatiably curious. Investigate the benefits of going and seeing a chiropractor to get your spine and your energy. Be insatiably curious about the benefits of I never heard of Reiki before, but I got curious about it. And it's like, well, I want to go explore that and find out. And it turned out to be, for me, it was helpful. Supplements and or EMDR, to deal with, because a lot of times, this is another, like, no one outruns the universe. A lot of our traumatic experiences that stack up, and they don't have to be, like, for me, an early one was childhood sexual abuse. Okay, like that doesn't have to be like that. It could be something that got stuck in you, the emotion code talks about. It could just be that thing that got stuck there, and it's caused you these challenges. I would encourage you to be insatiably curious about. Keep your mind open. Don't be religious about just pushing it down and hiding it, or just pretending like it's not there. Be insatiably curious about how you can bring it out into the open, deal with it, and put that pain away, right? You can move on from that. So that's two things that I would kind of, I think, use as a summarizing kind of communication around, this conversation is one, be very careful about being religious about anything that's not your religion. And the flip side of that coin is be insatiably curious. Be curious about how you can get out of this thing. Don't be religious that you're stuck here and it's not going to get better. Be curious about how you can get out of it. Be curious about therapies. And I'm not saying just throw caution to the wind. It does matter. You need, if you're going to see a psychiatrist, you need a good psychiatrist. You're going to see a doctor, you want a physician if you want, I mean, those things matter, but be curious about the possibilities of things that might help you survive, recover, and then accelerate past this setback that's happened to you.
I love that. I love that tremendously. Now tell everybody about your book about overcoming life's toughest setbacks.
You could find it on Amazon. If you just search for my name, Andy Campbell, I think it's the first thing that pops up. It was the cover is actually kind of funny. I went on a kind of a pilgrimage to some old so the Indian mounds in the Southeast. My son and I went. We visited all these Indian mounds, and one day I was there, and I was kind of. Like I was an Indian chief on top of this Indian mound, and I was looking up at the sun, and I was, and then I looked at the picture later when I was kind of formulating this book. I thought, man, that's kind of like I'm on top of, I've made it to the top of this hill, this mound, this, you know, and the sun is shining down, and I'm really grateful to be there. Like I just, so like that's kind of what that picture represents. It's like, you know, I made it to the top of this mound. There's probably other ones that I've got to climb, but I made it to this one, and I was kind of celebrating just being on that one. I think that's important, you know, celebrate the little wins. Don't wait until you get the big ones. Celebrate the little ones, you know. And so the book just kind of came together as a collection of these things that I'd written down over the years. I just some pieces of paper that I'd saved. I would write down these little cliches, and so one day, I decided that I would. A couple of my physician, and a couple of people had said, "Hey, you should write a book about your experiences." But I was like, "Well, I don't really want to like write a book that relives just, you know, childhood sexual abuse, loss of parents, you know, these things." And so I thought, well, maybe I'll just do something where I can kind of use those circumstances as ways to maybe better explain my views on these core beliefs. And then maybe someone else can take them and shape them and adopt them in a way that makes sense for them. And maybe that would encourage someone, you know, to not give up. And so that was kind of the genesis of writing it down. I don't pretend to be, you know, a writer. I'm not really a writer. As I mentioned to you, the editor I hired informed me that I needed to pay more because she'd read the manuscript and it needed a lot of work. And I thought it was pretty good, but it turned out it needed a lot of work. But it is my humble attempt to share with people that maybe just by putting it out there, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the story of Moses and like God comes to him and Moses is like, "Hey, look, I got a stutter. I'm not very good at this. I don't speak publicly. Okay. Like I barely even talk to my wife. Okay. Like I don't, like, not me." And he's like, "Don't worry about it. I'm going to send somebody to help you with it. And whatever you say, I'll work it out. People will understand." And so that's kind of the way I approached it. Like I'm just kind of putting it out there, and hopefully someone, at least one person in a difficult situation, there will be at least one of these beliefs that they will look at and go, "Damn, that was for me. Like that one, I think I can make it another day." Then that was the point of putting it down on paper.
I love it. I love it. Now, where can people find you?
You can find me at askandycampbell.com. I use that because people would ask me, "What'd you do? You know, how are you still alive?" You know, like it'd be 2 years or 3 years, and they'd say, "How are you still alive? You know, you had pancreatic cancer, you had stage four pancreatic cancer. Why are you still here?" Now, why I'm still not wholly certain of, but how? So I put together a little website where I could kind of start collecting and sharing information about, you know, what I did around the pancreatic cancer, and so it became askandycampbell.com because people would ask Andy Campbell what he was, how he was still alive. So you can go there and you can message me at the website.
Now, you're an author. Do you have any other additional services that you offer to others?
I have done some speaking, but and whether that's remote or in person, so that's kind of the extent of it. Sharing on podcast, having the book, the website, and then doing some speaking.
I love it. I love it. Well, this has been amazing, Andy. You know, you are just a ball of inspiration. I'm truly blown away by everything that you've gone through, you know, and how you've overcome everything. And I can't wait to share some other stories with our listeners because you have such a great way of looking at the obstacles that we all endure in life. And, you know, some people just get stuck. Some people just stop and quit, you know, but you kept going, you learned, you know, and you created your core values, and you created a way of your belief system that have gotten you through all these challenges in life that have, you know, in these obstacles that have come in, you know, in front of you. you overcame it. And that is just amazing in itself. And I just want to say that you're an amazing individual, and I really thank you for everything that you do, and thank you for sharing. It's not always that easy to share, but you shared your story, and now you're teaching people, how to, overcome similar situations. And even these core beliefs you could actually use in any obstacle in life, to help you get through it. So I really commend you on what you're doing. You're just a wonderful individual.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I appreciate the opportunity and you giving me the opportunity to speak with you and share with your listeners. Sincerely, thank you.
No, you're very welcome. And you have a great day.
You too.